This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour
with Rochelle Hunt
on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
New laws came into place today for city drivers, with changes now affecting everything from tram lines to the amount of space given to cyclists and how much space you must leave between you and the car in front of you. But what about country roads? How different are country roads to drive on, whether that be the conditions, the light, the quality of the road, and the speed limit? There's an inquiry into reducing country roads to 80 k's an hour. That's currently being contemplated by the Victorian government as we speak. The RACV says in its submission into this inquiry that there is an urgent need to review speed limits across the state, especially in country Victoria, with about half of the state's fatal crashes involving country drivers on regional roads. They also say that the current state of our funding, that it would take over 1,000 years to upgrade every road to an acceptable safety standard. So the RACV say we should just act immediately to make roads safer by reducing speed limits, or at least reviewing speed limits. So what do you reckon? 80 k's an hour on country roads. These are the back roads, the country roads, so not the freeways and highways. How would it affect you? How would it affect travel times, commute times? What about tourism? But would it save lives? Or is it actually about road quality, and are speed limits simply a band-aid approach? Should we reduce country roads to 80 k's an hour?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Well, David Rogers, you're a truck driver just outside of Ballarat from a town of Bungaree. What do you think when it comes to reducing back roads, country roads, to 80 k's an hour?
It's a very bad idea. I was travelling on the weekend, actually, and they've already started to do it on some of the country roads. And, yeah, it's only going to increase travel times. It needs to spend money on the road, on the surface of the road, not just wire road barriers and stuff like that, and centre medium strip, rumble strips. Like, it's a nice idea, but they need to spend money actually on the road surface.
Yeah. I know for the inquiry, the RACV said the exact same thing, David, but they also acknowledged that that's probably not going to happen anytime soon. So almost a band-aid solution is to reduce the speed limit to try and stop deaths on country roads. What do you think about that?
I understand that argument or point of view. One of the roads that they've put a speed restriction on that I was on the weekend, they haven't just put it in one section, they've put it over a whole section of the road, even where the road is in very good condition and nice and wide, you know, trees are cleared from the edges. It's a very good road, but they've got it over a big, long section of road, which just is so frustrating. Where it needed to be, it's good, you know, they should put it there, but where they've got it over a massive, you know, long stretch of road, which was just frustrating on the weekend, driving along at 80 kilometres an hour on a beautiful section of road.
How much does it increase your travel time as a truck driver, David?
Oh, it could be massive. And we're in a highly regulated industry. You don't need to be slowed down more by, you know, reduced speed limits.
What about for those that aren't truck drivers, that maybe haven't had all the years of experience and the time on the road like yourself? So for younger drivers, of which unfortunately are often in the high percentage of those that lose their lives on country roads, is it not something that will help protect younger drivers? I mean, you would see, you are almost like the fly on the wall for Victoria. Truck drivers see it all. Do you think it will help that demographic of drivers?
Probably not, because they probably won't even adhere to the speed limit. So, yeah, like we were poking along at 80 and there was plenty of people passing us, so, yeah, I don't think they'll stick to the limit anyway. I've got an 18-year-old son that's 10 foot tall and invincible, so I know what it's like, and, yeah, so I don't think it'll help, to license.
Yeah, gosh, that's a whole other conversation, isn't it? Looking at young drivers and when you first get your license and that feeling of being invincible, and especially on roads that maybe aren't in the condition that they would be in the city or in the suburbs. This is something that you've discussed with your son and you've tried to take measures with that, haven't you, David?
Yeah, before our son actually got his license, I tried to do a defensive driving course for him, but the people in Melbourne wouldn't do it because he didn't have his license. So as soon as he turned 18 in February, and we got him a defensive driving course for his license, so for his birthday, and he did it in April, and I was very, very cautious because the government actually don't want you to do that, but I got him to do it, and I was very worried that when he would come home from the course, he would say, well, that was a waste of money or a waste of time. My son is a man of few words, but I said to him when he got home, I said, how was the course, mate? And he said, yeah, no, real good, Dad. Oh, great, mate. Yeah, no, real good. And I thought, oh, well, it saves his life and, you know, saves an accident.
Yeah.
It's a win-win.
Just having that back knowledge there if you get yourself into a, because, you know, you never get warning, do you, of something that's going to happen that's potentially going to cause you to be involved in a car accident. And you need to know how to react at the time. So at the end of the day, David, when you speak to other truck drivers, do you think it just comes down to road conditions that needs to be fixed? And, you know, what's the likelihood of that happening?
I don't know whether it'll happen, but it was a good program. Finished up, we did a trial program. It's called Truck Spot. You put a mark on a map as to where there was bad roads, and they were getting them fixed. Safe Freight Networks were doing it. I reckon it was a great idea, but we've got to get better driver training, and we should start with our young people because they're the generation that is highly recognized. You know, they're all over the statistics, so
yeah. Both really good ideas. I think education for first-time drivers and in those first couple of years. But I love the idea of using truck drivers to, you know, almost use a real-time app to let people know and to let the officials know where the roads need work. That's a fantastic idea. Does that not still run?
No, it was only a trial as far as I know, but it worked really well. They're collating the evidence at the moment. Sadly, a lot of the problem is a lot of people complain about parts of the road, but they don't actually complain to the right people. Safe Freight Networks idea. You could actually mark it on the map, and then you had to give a reason, and you had to comment on it. You know, was it really dangerous? Was it really bad? And it worked really, really well, I thought. And I know I marked, you know, a few spots on the map. So.
Wow.
It
seems like a really good solution. It's a shame that that's not still up and running. David, I know you're busy. You've stopped for a bit of a break. Where are you heading to today?
Off to Kerang and then over to Murray Bridge. So, yeah.
All right, mate. Well, thanks so much. Drive safe.
Thank you.
It's David Rogers, truck driver just outside of Ballarat. So many texts on this. I'm going to try and read a few. Rochelle is a rural postie who drives on all types of roads. I believe reducing the speed limit is not the solution. It's the condition of the road. Since I started in 2009, they've just gotten so much worse. I've had to go from a regular car to a four-wheel drive, specifically, I should say, because of the deterioration of the roads. That's from Nicole. And this, how about the government maintain the existing roads and the condition of a lot of country roads? It's a complete shambles and it's very, very dangerous. No wonder we have so many collisions. Fix the roads has got nothing to do with speed, says another text. And this, they did this on the Mornington Peninsula over summer and generally it was okay, except it didn't really fix in the black spots, e.g. Forest Road and Mount Martha, where we really need to install a roundabout. Also, it doesn't fix mirror roads like Eastbourne Road and the speed limit there is 60. That's from Susan in Tutgaruk. Plenty of calls. Be patient. We're going to try and get to as many of you as possible. John's in Warrialik. Hi, John.
Oh, good morning, Michelle.
What do you think? 80 k's an hour, yes or no?
Well, the Warburton Highway already has the 80 kilometres an hour speed zone for the majority of its length. Some places it's a bit less going through towns. And what you need to look at or get the details from Vic Roads or the emergency services is the number of car accidents and serious car accidents requiring hospitalisation and also road deaths along that stretch of road since the speed limit has been reduced from 100 down to 80 kilometres per hour.
And what are the numbers telling you, that it's not working or that it is?
Well, we're still getting lots of head-on collisions involving fatalities and also serious life-changing injuries.
And so that's with a reduction of 80 k's. So if it was 100, correct, do you think it would be the same situation or could be worse?
The data should show that. We need somebody to actually, maybe one of the listeners who's across that data, to call in and provide us with some insight into what the difference is between the two periods.
And do people generally abide by the rules, especially if it's something that you've seen a reduction in? Do locals or do people realise that the speed has been reduced in that area, John?
Depending on which group of drivers it is, tradies first thing in the morning don't usually abide by the 80 kilometres an hour speed limit. And also, there seems to be a new rule in the P-Platter's licence test to travel behind the car in front by one car length at 80 kilometres per hour. So there seems to be a tailgating tick box in there that they must pass. We notice a lot of that every day.
John, good to hear from you. Thank you. Speaking on the Warburton Highway, Pete is in Hamilton. Hi, Peter.
Hi.
What do you think?
Oh, everyone's sort of got it covered. Like, so our regional area, it's major agricultural freight lines, lots of trucks on it. And like our roads, particularly during the winter, they're just filling up potholes and stuff. The actual road surfaces are very dangerous. You can be following like a B-double. I've been following B-doubles. They're going in a straight line and their back end will just swing out onto the wrong side of the road because of the road surface. So people are dying on country roads because the country roads are so appalling is half the problem.
So what do you do then, Peter, if you see that? If you're behind a B-double and you just think, oh, my gosh, this is just so dangerous, and you see it day after day, do you know who to complain to? And if you do, do you think that there'll be any change?
Oh, it takes years for change. The Dunkeld-Cavendish Road was single bitumen taking B-doubles for 30, 40 years, and they've only just recently changed it, and we've been complaining about it and gone to federal, state government, and that's how long it took. And the near misses, like the people talk about the accidents, but the near misses, you see, it's just, and it's all due to road surfaces. And like all our freight, like, you know, to our supermarkets and everything travels on road, so you need an efficient way, you need good road systems to get it there efficiently. So the investment needs to happen in the roads, and it's just, we're that far behind the eight ball. I don't know what the answer is.
Yeah. So speed limits.
And you go to Melbourne and you drive on all these beautiful roads. You see where the money's getting spent down there, not here.
It's funny. I was reading some commentary on this, and you know, some people believe that the people that are, you know, making the decisions on this just don't live in the country, don't spend any time in the country. Would you agree with that?
Oh, maybe. Yeah. You see some stuff. That may have something to do with it. But, like, even our arterial roads, like to Portland, main tourist road to Port Ferry that comes up to the Grampians, like, they get full of potholes and that, and, you know, you can see why there's accidents on them. Like, you know, they're actually... And driving trucks on them, I'd hate to be a truck driver. You'd just have to be so alert. Like, it's just, like, the road surfaces, like, they make them work hard in those trucks. You sort of... People blame the trucks, but I feel sorry for the guys driving them. They've got a hard task, like just to keep their vehicles on the road, even on what are called our main arterial roads in this area.
Really good to hear from you, Peter. Thanks, mate. Good on you. Drive safe.
No worries.
See you.
Bye.
Margaret's in Mildura. Hi, Margaret.
Hi, Rochelle. How are you?
Good. What did you want to say?
I have a couple of points. Firstly, I'd like to point out that you will never eliminate the human factor in the road toll. Humans are fallible and you know, we have to account for that. So I think that trying to get the road toll down to zero is a very unrealistic idea. And secondly, do people realise how far some of these places are? Like here in Mildura, we're 6 hours at least from Melbourne and we're 5 hours from Adelaide. And they're already reducing the speed on the Calder Highway. Surreptitiously, it's gone from 110 in a lot of places this side of Bendigo to 100. It's up to Charlton and those sort of areas. So that, now they're going to try and reduce the back roads and the other roads. And it's going to make our life very frustrating and very difficult.
Margaret, what about the idea, though, that we have to do something? You know, when you look at the high percentage of fatalities, they're coming from country roads. So if the RACV is right, and if by their calculations it's going to take 1,000 years to fix all of the country roads, I'm laughing because it just sounds ridiculous, by the way.
Yeah, it does sound ridiculous.
I know, but if the fact is, if they're not going to be fixed and fixed in any sort of normal length of time, does making something like a reduced speed limit, does it at least help and save lives?
Not really. I don't think it will, because it'll just make people more frustrated. And I'll, like your previous callers have said, they'll ignore speed limits and just do what they want to until there's a, they see a camera car sitting on the side of the road somewhere, and they'll slow down for it and then just keep going. Driver education is a lot to be done with there. Young people tailgate and just ignore rules, and part of that is being young, but part of it is also awareness.
Yeah, driver education is a huge part of it, actually, and that's what we heard, you know, earlier when we were speaking to David, one of the truck drivers that we speak to on a semi-regular basis. And I don't know how much education, other than sitting with an older brother or sister or mum or dad or whoever it may be, or a driving instructor, whether or not education on how we drive and how we drive fit for purpose for the sort of roads that we're driving on. Good to hear from you, Margaret, as well. You can text. Look, I will not get a chance to read out all of your texts, but please keep them coming in, because it gives us lots of different ideas. It gives me lots of questions that I can put to people as well. Let's go to Associate Professor Michael Fitzharris. He's from the Monash University Accident Research Centre and has been listening to this, Michael. Michael, from what I can gather at the moment, people living in regional Victoria, they don't want the speed reduced. They want the roads fixed. How do you feel about that?
Yes, it's an incredibly challenging area, isn't it, for people who live in the country, certainly. And I confess off the bat, I live in inner Melbourne and work out at Clayton at Monash. So, look, I certainly understand the different perspectives, but what we're sort of talking about is having a system that's actually fit for purpose. And our recent research through the Enhanced Crash Investigation Study and our look at all of the fatality data, we see that our system is not. So as we're sort of striving towards reducing the number of people killed and injured on our roads, we have to think of all the different things in the toolbox. And that's our greatest challenge at the moment.
And what's at the top of the list of your toolbox? Is it education? Is it road safety? What falls at the top for you?
Yeah, I think there are a number of different things, and we tend to split things into the safe driver, the safe vehicle, and the safe roads. And all of the things in each of those pillars are really complementary. So I sort of, when people say, well, what is the one thing, Michael, that you would do? I sort of like things in each of the pillars. We can't just pick on one thing at a time. I think one of the things that we do see, and I've listened to some of the callers, and you can hear the frustration, and I understand 6 hours from Mildura to Melbourne and 5 to Adelaide and so on. One of our things is, when we build and design roads and we have an interaction with the car, and then we sort of throw a human in the middle of it, we start to have this system that we need to have in balance. And as I was sort of saying, at the moment, it's not quite in balance. So in the future, vehicles will do a lot of the work for us. You know, we've got safer vehicle on our roads at the moment. We've got now 4- and 5-star cars. I'd like to see everyone in a 5-star car, and you don't have to spend an awful lot of money to get a 5-star car, but the things that matter are really around airbags, wearing of seatbelts, and we still see around 11% of people involved in serious injury crashes are not doing the simple thing like putting on their seatbelt. So that can be a driver education side of things. But one of the really key things, and why speed matters, is because vehicles have limits. So, you know, when a car is built and manufactured, it's crash tested, and everyone knows the crash test dummies. It's crash tested at a certain speed. It means it has a limit. So when you're in a crash, the key issue around why the speed limit is important is we need, when crashes do occur, they have to occur within the safety envelope of the car. Unfortunately, we see it on a lot of 80, you know, 90, 100 kilometre hour roads when crashes happen. we're not getting enough speed off. So the crashes are happening outside of the safety envelope of the vehicle. So then you see vehicles being, you know, heavily mangled. People are trapped in the car. Emergency services take a long time, and SES to extricate people from the car, helicopter them to the Alfred or the Royal Melbourne, and that the survival probability is a lot less. So speed really matters, because what we are having, unfortunately, in a lot of crashes that happen on high-speed roads, which are obviously in rural Victoria, is a lot of them are happening outside of that safety envelope of the car. And that's simply a reflection of the speed limit. And, you know, it's complicated by, you know, trees and trucks and things. But that's really a fundamental issue of why the speed limit matters. And that's an important
tool for us. I wonder, though, how much human behaviour comes into this. I've had multiple texts that say, well, you're not going to ever change human behaviour. Now, I don't know how much you can research that and research the mindset of someone as to maybe why they're driving too fast, or why they're driving dangerously, or tailgating, or whatever it may be. But does human behaviour come into this? Or if the road is just rubbish and if it's full of potholes, has it got nothing to do with human behaviour?
Oh, look, it's sort of a mix of everything. So human behaviour does play a really key role in this. So what we want is drivers to be alert, oriented. So when something does happen, for whatever reason, and we can talk about those in the next little bit, when something does happen, the driver can respond. What happens is when people are on drugs, or their BAC is too high, or they're exceeding the speed limit, it really increases the risk of being involved in a crash themselves, but also having a crash with other people. And then we have other behaviours of the inappropriate speed of, so someone who's speeding within, someone who's driving within the speed limit, but on a really wet road. Things like I would call road craft. It seems to be a real issue, the lack of indication and so on. And then you overlay road conditions. So I heard the gentleman talk about the B-doubles on the Cavendish Road. You know, lane width becomes important, potholes become important, the shoulders become important, how fractured the shoulders are, you know, the surface condition of the shoulder, if it's not bitumen. These are all legitimate issues.
And even, I know off air, I spoke to David Rogers, our truck driver, and he spoke about even trees and trees overhanging and how that may affect trucks and trucks maybe that are passing each other, and depending if you've got live cattle on board, what it can and do there as well. So it's not always just the road surface. Michael, we're going to take some calls. Associate Professor Michael Fitzharris is with you. He's from the Monash University Accident Research Centre. But there's a text here that I wanted to read. It says, I live in a country road just near Ballarat. The road is Nard Arterial road for Buninyong as well as the Fed Uni. Cars tear up and down that road at 100 k's plus. Even though there is significant growth in semi-rural population in Ballarat, traffic has tripled. Speed limits have remained unchanged. It's too late to blame the road condition. The speed is too high for this area. I think speed is definitely an issue, and a fatality in our area means the problem can't be ignored. I mean, that's something that maybe we can discuss in just a moment, Michael, and that is looking at what defines a regional area and regional roads now, and how much they're increased, and how many people are moving to these areas, and how maybe depending on population and commutes, whether it be to school or to the city, that maybe they need to change as well. But Gary's been waiting in Port Arlington. Gary, what did you want to say?
Hi, Rochelle. Yeah, look, I'm just giving an observation of, we've had an upgrade down here. There's a big project where they bypassed a township called Drysdale, and the incoming road from Geelong on the, what they call the Port Arlington Road, went from 100 k's down to 80. And I understand why they've done it, because there's changed conditions. There's now an intersection with lights, but people that used to be passing me at 10 kilometres over the 100 k speed limit are now passing me 30 kilometres an hour over, because I'm sitting on 80, which is a new speed limit in that area, and people still sitting on 100, and I'm talking commercial, private, trucks.
So I actually people feel just aren't less going safe by the new speed limit?
Yeah, so I know. Some people are, some people are not. So I actually feel less safe on the same piece of road, which has actually been improved. from what it was.
And Gary, do you know who to talk to about this? If you know, if you wanted to raise this with someone, who would you speak to?
Well, I'm guessing you'd have to. I don't know. I've spoken with the local police down here, and they say that they, you know, that they quite regularly are out and looking at things, but I mean they can't be everywhere all the time. So I don't know. But the human nature, if something's been set at a speed limit for, you know, infinitum, it's very difficult to get people to change their behaviour, I believe.
Well, we're going to speak to a police officer, a regional police officer in a small area in just a moment as well. So maybe we can ask him what he thinks people should be doing. Brian's just outside of Emerald. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Yes, thanks for letting me on the program. I toured in Midwest New South Wales some years ago, and there was a huge percentage of fatalities on the road, and the roads varied, and of course a lot of them were dirt roads. So what we did, we heard of a scheme in Canada where students have to learn to drive from year nine upwards, and they have to learn how to do basic mechanics on cars. That's all of them. And we put in a system through the Lions Club where a group of us went to advanced driver training school and got our qualifications to teach the kids, which we did, and they passed. And within, oh, I suppose, 5 years, we'd reduced that fatality rate to about 20% of what it was. But really, you are taught to drive on the road surface that you have, not just here off anywhere. And so many people don't know how to drive through slippery roads. So many people don't know how to drive.
And it's a little bit vice versa, isn't it? I know my family, for example, my auntie won't drive in the city, absolutely panics. She's like, no way, it freaks me out. And it took me a long time to learn how to drive through really busy parts of the city. But vice versa, you know, there might be country roads where if you relocate, if you move or you're travelling or you live in that area, country roads can be very, very different. And what I'm always surprised with, Michael, is that they can be very, very dark. And all of a sudden, you just think, oh my God, I feel like I can't see in front of me. And you're sort of flicking from high beams to low beams. And if there is a pothole or a ditch beside you or an animal, whatever it may be, your visibility can often be really low.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think there are a number of points here in the last couple of callers. I think there's the idea of country roads and city traffic, and we see with the population spread into regional Victoria out of Melbourne and people relocating from either interstate or overseas, you're seeing, you know, traffic volumes increase and the road network's not kept pace with that from a number of perspectives. I think just stepping back a bit, you know, we're seeing up to 30 people seriously injured and coming to hospital for every person killed and injured. And the consequences of that are really, really significant. So we start to think about, well, how can we manage all of that? And I think one of the things is how we actually match the speed limit to the road. And yes, there's human behaviour. And we hope to design a system where we provide a safe environment for people. But things like visibility are important, and there are things like we raise reflective pavement markers, your guideposts with the cat eyes on them to help you guide you around the corner. In a lot of locations, these things are not present, and that starts to become an issue when you've got a high speed limit and there are some road surface conditions. And then if I want to, you know, complicate matters even more, people's potential, you know, their tyres and braking might not be up to scratch. So you start to actually look at all elements of the system and say, well, what bits do we need to improve? And it's kind of like the easy answer is, well, everything. But that's sort of complicated. But I think if we, the parliamentary inquiry that was just released a month or so ago has said that our road safety has stalled. We need to look at different solutions. And sometimes when we change the speed limit, like if it's coming into Geelong or wherever, stepping down from 100 to 80, those things are really important to be backed by enforcement and education. So the public, you know, people actually understand the risk and why that change has happened. And I think we need to be better at communicating that and why it's important to have the speed limit, which is fit for purpose for the road that it's on. So we want to push people. Ideally, my solution is we want to push people onto higher grade, higher speed roads, roads that can sustain those higher speed limits, so your A class and your M roads. The back roads are sort of almost feeder roads, and they might only be 10 or 20 kilometres. So if we drop it from 100 to 80, you might lose 2 minutes, but it will save your life. And that's the really key aspect, is that if a crash does happen, it'll happen within the ability of the vehicle to protect you. And that's really the fundamental point, is that we drive to the speed limit generally, and we have police operations, covert and overt, and we mix them up and we make them random so it could be anywhere, anytime. That's really important. That's what we want people to think. You will be caught. You will have a fine. And that's to keep people at the speed limit. But we're working on the assumption that the speed limit's correct. And a lot of the times they're not, because they're not matched to the road, the lane width, the trees and all the other stuff.
Gosh, and I find it interesting too when we talk about city traffic in a country area, and that's probably something that we haven't spoken about as much as we'll need to speak about into the future. There's a text here that says, we already can't get professionals in regional towns and areas. Cutting the speed limit will put people off even more. I'd love to hear from, if you live in the city and in the suburbs and if you travel on a semi-regular basis to regional Victoria, does this affect you? I mean, some people within the sector are saying that it will stop people travelling, let's say, Mallacoota for holidays because it's just going to take too long. I'm wondering whether or not you agree with that. And how do you feel when you go from being a city driver to the country, to regional areas? Do you feel like you're equipped enough, that your driving knowledge is strong enough? Chris is in Lancefield. Hi, Chris.
G'day, Rochelle. How are you?
Good, mate. What did you want to say?
Look, your previous speakers just started to touch on it, but the term country roads to me covers a wide variety. There are gravel roads in the country where 100 is obviously totally impractical, right? There are single lane asphalt roads in the country, and there are double lane well divided. So I think we need to be a little bit more specific about where our speed limits go. And the second comment would be, I would hate this to become a discussion about lowering speed limits rather than encouraging governments to maintain roads and to identify key roads between large city populations.
And what I like is when you talk about identifying them there. Good on you, Chris. Thanks for holding. Michael, when we spoke to David, our truck driver, he was saying that there was a pilot that he thought, anyhow, that was working really well, where truck drivers would identify a problem road and you'd almost just download an app and you would say, okay, X, Y, and Z road, there's huge potholes, here's where it is, here's the problems that it's causing. And he didn't know whether it was just coincidence that then those roads would get fixed, but it was a way of documenting it that he believed works, that was trialled and then just kind of dropped.
Yeah, look, I'm not aware of that one specifically, but I think that input into regional or any Vic Roads office is really useful. And it has to be acted on. That's the reality. I think that's really important. And when we talk about country roads, I appreciate, I've driven on lots of dirt and sandy type roads that are hard and compacted, and some have corrugations. And I used to have a HX Ute. In fact, it's sitting in the shed, a 1977 car, and used to drive to Horsham quite a bit. So that experience is really interesting. There's no way you could drive on a dirt corrugated road that's been poorly maintained at anything above 50 or 60, otherwise you're in trouble and it's terribly uncomfortable. But I think what we talk about is local roads and C-class roads. So we want to create a distinction between what we call our road hierarchy. So if you're going down to Mallacoota, you're going to be on the Princess Highway. You'll be on a high-grade road that can support and sustain a higher speed limit. There's no question about that. If the road is fit for purpose, you can maintain 100 or 110, for example, on the Hume. It's not touching those roads. It's those kind of back local roads that have, flat four-way intersections at 100, that have poor sight distance because there's a Telstra distributor box, on the corner, or the incline is wrong and the road surface isn't quite right. or you've got a heavily tree-lined road. These are roads that people I know go from the gate to the main road, and you might go from a local to a C to a B to an M. That's the hierarchy. So we should be matching our limits around that, and that's really the key. So we wouldn't be saying, well, you know, we have to balance out people's safety. The fact that, you know, we have 255 people dying, that's the five-year average, and half of those are on rural roads, and nearly all of them are on local and C roads that have 100K, that are single lane, undivided, no barriers, poor shoulders, potentially poor road surface. It's sort of like the weapon or our tool in the arsenal to say we need to save lives. Yeah. We need to stop people coming to hospital, and that's the key.
Michael, it's been really good spending some time with you. Thanks so much for your insights.
Pleasure.
It's Associate Professor Michael Fitzharris. He's from Monash University Accident Research Centre. Nigel's in Heathmont. He sent a message saying, my drive home last night from Inverloch to Melbourne after dark, poor light, rain, poor visibility, oncoming lights, especially between Inverloch and Kilcunda. Speed limit 100 k's an hour, not ideal. For me, it would be a maximum of 80 or 90 k's per hour. It's just much safer. We'll speak to a small town police officer in just a moment on what his views are, and I promise I'll get to more of your calls.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So an inquiry at the moment into whether or not country roads where the speed limit should be reduced to 80 k's an hour. What do you think about that? This text, Rish, how often do they update speed limits? Cars have changed greatly over the last 50 years, but the limits haven't. Cars are much safer, better handled and more responsive now. That's from Ron. And this, I will never be able to own a five-star car unless it's 20 years old. Dropping the limit is a good option for me. Ian Norton is a leading senior constable with Victoria Police from Rawson, a town with a population of just under 300 people. Ian, what do you think that the locals of Rawson, how would they feel about dropping speed limits off the freeways, off the highways to 80 k's?
Yeah, Rochelle, that's one of those problems you're not going to solve in the power of this show. And the speed limits up here have been changed on some of the roads. The road from Rawson to Walhalla was dropped to 80 k's, but also then you've got the 45-minute trip into town that if you drop the speed limits, you know, it's difficult. It's going to slow people's getting in and out of town, which is a long trip as it is, so difficult.
As a police officer, and especially in a small country town, and I'm, I guess, speaking from experience here as the daughter of one, it's you that most of the time would be arriving at accidents. And, you know, unfortunately, you would know a lot of the people that are in the cars, especially when there are fatalities. And there's no disputing that there is a high number of deaths in regional Victoria on regional roads. So if it's not the speed limit, what is it then? What needs to change, Ian?
Attitude of the drivers. It's one of the main things. My children, when I was teaching them to drive, cars these days have a lot of safety features. And as I said, that those safety features still have to obey the laws of physics. And speed is a definite contributor to fatalities and to serious injury accidents. But, you know, with cars as they are, the driver is still the one that's in control of that car, and is a problem with attitude.
So where do we change that and fix that? If you think about how the average person, I know it changes over the years with how we document it and how you go about getting your license, but on average, you know, very few people beyond sitting next to a parent or a grandparent or something would do any sort of extra education when it comes to learning how to drive. Does that need to change?
I would like to see every driver required to get their license and with an update of some sort of driving course, not just in how to handle the car, but to how to drive. People, and it would be noticed across the state, that people are angry now. Drivers are angry. They're impatient. They're angry. We get a lot of road rage. over some of the most stupid things. And I'd like to see something that's going to try and change the attitude to people to where they're considerate of their
How do we do that, Ian? Because you're not alone. I feel it as well when I drive. There's a reason why it's stressful now, and it's not just because of bad traffic. It's because you feel like the person behind you is saying bad things about you and probably swearing about you, and you know that there's this tension whenever we're in the car, and I don't know how we change that.
I don't know either, but I just wish we could. It's
crazy, isn't
it? One of the things that causes people to take risks that they really shouldn't be taking in cars. And it's interesting that we say that the speed limit should be dropped. One of the issues that we have up here is we get a large number of tourists coming into the area, and most of them are city drivers coming up into the country. And most of the accidents we have up here are country drivers. It's not the old adage of people saying, oh, it's the city drivers coming up and having the accidents. It's not. It's our local people having the accidents. But a lot of the impatience is caused by a lot of people coming into the area and driving too slowly, which is sometimes just as bad as driving too fast, is it? It causes a lot of frustration, and then, as I was saying, people doing things that they probably normally wouldn't do, try to overtake in stupid places, and that's, I've had accidents caused by that. So, yeah.
Do you think it'll happen? I mean, this is just an inquiry at the moment. Do you think it's a reality? Will country roads across the state be dropped to 80 k's an hour?
Just on a personal opinion on that one, it would have to be done on a case-by-case basis. It's very hard to put a blanket over all roads. Some roads are much better than others. Country roads are quite capable of handling 100 kilometre an hour speed limit, but then there's a lot that aren't. And it changes too with the conditions of the road and the repairs on the roads.
And I wonder if that's just impossible, whether the inquiry or they're making it blanket, because how do you go about and see that the conditions are different in every area? Like, for example, there's a text here saying, we live on a dirt road just near Warrigal. There's rubbish trucks, utes, passenger vehicles, dirt bikes frequently roar up and down the road. It's over 100 k's an hour here. I mean, that's just Warrigal. You're in Rawson. Then we've had people, you know, from Ballarat. We've had people from Horsham. How do you manage and inspect all of those roads?
Again, this is where, it comes back to the attitude of the driver and trying to get the drivers to understand road conditions and drive to those conditions. It's part of what we should be doing. We should be assessing the road in front of us and driving accordingly. Unfortunately, people just don't seem... We put more signs up and people just don't seem to want to take notice of the signs. It's crazy, but... It's the human nature of wanting to get there as fast as we possibly can.
Yep, lots of people are agreeing with you. Ian, thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
It's Ian Norton, leading senior constable with Victoria Police from Rawson. It's a beautiful little area, population just under 300 people. Ruth in Corangamite totally agrees. Absolutely, you need to drive to conditions, whether you're on arterial or on local roads. But here in Corangamite Shire, the worst and most dangerous roads are the responsibility of the state, where they have already reduced the speed limit rather than fix the problems. Widespread lowering of speed limits in country Victoria will have an additional effect on productivity. That's from Ruth. Ruth, thank you. Michael, who's in Torquay. Hi, Michael.
Hello, Rochelle. Thanks for taking the call.
That's all right.
A lot of what your people are saying with the attitude, I think they're spot on. I have a background in driver education, also in competitive motorsport, and I also do a lot of country miles. And I've looked at this, and I think that changing the speed limit is only mucking around the margin. We're not addressing the key problem. And I've got the answer, or part of the answer, in relation to attitude. And how do you change people's attitude, which you mentioned before?
When you say that you provide defensive driver education, who's attending these classes?
Unfortunately, it's mainly younger people. See, our licence system is basically teaching people how to control a motor car. It doesn't teach them how to drive. to how to read conditions, how to back off, how to be slow. And I think a lot of people in authority have an attitude that advanced driver education is teaching people to crash at a higher speed. But good advanced driver education is teaching people when to actually drive at a higher speed and when to back off when it's raining, all those kind of things.
Is there something that needs to be more widespread? Should more of us be doing classes like the ones that you take?
Well, I go even further now. I think we need to include that as part of the building blocks. I think to change attitude, I think we've got to bring in... The main thing is we've got to stop people thinking that driving is a right and it is really a privilege. If we introduce graded licences, so you have an A-grade licence and you only get an A-grade licence if you are recognised and can prove that you're a really good driver, that you've done advanced driver, you've had 0 points for 5 years, you might even have a tachograph fitted in your car which shows you never speed. You'd have a special number plate surround which would indicate you as an A, and then in those conditions, in where they're looking at making 80, if you're a D-grade driver, in other words, somebody who's just got their licence, yes, you could only do 80. But if you're an A-grade driver and you've already shown that you're not impatient, you wouldn't come up to somebody, monitor their rear vision mirror and then pull out and pass them, you've got all those things together, not just the ability to control the car, but the ability to know what driving is about. An A-grade licence is something really special.
You've put a lot of thought into that. Good on you. Thank you. Russell's in Currumburra. Hi, Russell.
Yeah, hi, Rochelle. How are you?
Good, mate. What did you want to say?
Yeah, look, I haven't heard the whole of the program, but it's been very good. But we've had a road out here that's been dropped 80 k's probably for 2 years or more now, and it was quite fine at 100. Now that it's 80, people think, oh, well, I can look at my phone because I'm not driving as fast. It is more dangerous now at 80 than it was at 100.
We haven't even discussed phones now. I did a little just personal experiment, and this was in the suburbs of Melbourne, where I thought, oh, I'll just have a look. And I was sitting as a passenger, as how many people are on their phones whilst they're driving. And I actually had to stop my little sick game because it made me just so frightened and depressed as to how many people were on their phones texting whilst driving.
Absolutely. I drive a school bus, and I'd see two a day on their phone, and sometimes through school zones. It's just ridiculous.
Good on you. Thanks for waiting. Well, a little earlier we spoke about truck drivers using an app where they can document and they can mark where roads are problematic, and they can upload that in real time so that the right people find out where the problems are and hopefully get fixed. We weren't sure whether or not this was still running. We heard that it was a trial, but John's called in. And John, you're a truck driver, and is this app still up and running?
Yeah, it sure is. And to get to it, you don't need an app. You can just type in truckspot.crowdspot.com.au.
And how does it work?
So it literally brings up a map. People can mark on that map exactly what the issue is. It's not only thorns, it's also flowers. So if people think it's a good idea what's happened on that particular road, they can articulate that. If they see an issue on that road, it will be articulated. We then just get a report from CrowdSpot, which heat maps the areas, and we pass that report on to the relevant road owners.
Right, so that's what I'm curious about is then once we get that information, that's all well and good, but then who does it go to, and does it actually lead to things being changed?
It absolutely has, and particularly in the Green Triangle area, which is the Western Victoria, where we get trucks reporting overhanging branches and things like that. We can just pass that on and it gets fixed usually within 48 hours.
So are you involved in this app, John, or in this website?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so we were doing it as a trial, but because it's been so popular, we've just kept it open while we can. And the idea will be to look at it 2 years down the track and see if things have improved.
And can this work beyond that area that you mentioned? Can this be a statewide initiative?
Well, it's not meant to, but it does.
It's incredible. All right, so people can go to truckspot.crowdspot.com.au. Is that correct?
Yeah, and it was funded by the National Heavy Vehicle Regulator.
Good on you, John. Thanks for letting us know.
No worries. Have a good afternoon.
You too.
Bye.
When we're talking about driver's attitude and learning how to drive, this is something that I know probably many people have heard a similar line. It says, when my father first taught me how to drive, he told me that a car is a lethal weapon. It's something to keep in mind. So many texts on saying driving is not a right, it's a responsibility. Building hierarchies is not the approach. Obviously, these things need to be planned. A ridiculous idea, says this text as well. Different grade drivers, different drivers, different speeds. It would cause a huge increase in traffic. Huge apologies if I did not get through all of your texts today. There are so many. And the board has been flashing at me the entire program as well. I tried to get in as many calls as I possibly could. I also tried to cover as much of the state as I possibly could as well. So again, I'm sorry if I couldn't get to your call. I think it's something that we might have to revisit down the track. But if you just joined us and you want to listen back, then you can subscribe to the Conversation Hour podcast. You can go to the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also email us. We read those emails. conversationhour@abc.net.au. And I think the main thing that I kind of gained from today is that we have to change our attitude. You know, it's okay if you get there a little later, as long as you get there. And life is just so stressful and full on. If we can reduce that stress in our cars, turn it into a happy place. You know, the longer you have, I don't know, find a way to turn that into glass half full. I know it's easier said than done, but let's all try and get to where we want to get and get there safely.